Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Radio Networks on Saturday, July 23rd, 2011. This is episode 789. This portion of the Tech Guy show, this podcast of the Tech Guy show, in its entirety, brought to you by my good friends at Netflix. Watch your favorite movies streaming live on your PC, your Mac, your iPad, or your iPhone today. Try it free for 30 days. Visit Netflix.com/TWiT. And now, ladies and gentlemen, please hold your applause. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy.
All right, Leo. Hotting you up.
Hi, how are you? Welcome. Good day to you. Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. And it's time to talk about computers, the internet, cell phones and camcorders, MP3 players, home theater, all the digital jazz that's part of our life today that sometimes baffles, sometimes amazes, sometimes amuses, sometimes just drives us out of our tree. And that's what I'm here for, to help you get back into your tree. Think of me as a little stepladder to lift you back onto the branch of technology. If you have a question, a comment, a suggestion, if you want to talk about high tech, if you want to complain about bad metaphors, 8888-ASK-LEO is the phone number. 888-827. I always have to remember this. 5536. You'd think after, how many years have I been doing this show? After 789 episodes, I know the number by now. 8888-ASK-LEO. And I'm telling you, we talk about everything. I mean, the philosophical and psychological implications of computing, everything on this show. So don't hold back. I'm a little irate, to be honest. This was the week that Lion came out on Apple. Perhaps you've upgraded. We'll talk a little bit about how to upgrade your Macintosh to Lion. Who should, who shouldn't, what Lion offers, things like that. But, I was on the Mac store looking at Lion. And, Apple now has this app store where they sell applications. And I was looking, number one selling top paid application in the Apple store, OS X Lion. Well, that's not a big surprise. $30, easy upgrade. You just download it from the... Then I looked at the second one. iClean Memory. This is the number two most purchased. I guess it's this week. The way these charts work is unclear, but I would guess this week is a program that claims to clean your memory. And it got me thinking. That's only 99 cents. But folks, don't buy this program. It got me thinking about snake oil and computing. Fortunately, this hasn't really hit our most modern computing app platforms yet, the cell phone and things like that, the tablets. But on PCs, this is a long-standing tradition of programs like this that claim this is what we call a memory manager. I haven't seen one of these in years. You do not need it. It does not do anything. It is completely a waste of time. If you buy this for 99 cents, you are wasting your money. And yet it's the second best-selling application on the Macintosh right now. Has the world gone mad? And when you read the reviews, it says, "Wow, it cleaned up my RAM. Amazing." I ran this and I went from having 500 megabytes free to having 2 gigabytes free. Amazing. Well, yes, of course it can do that. Any program does that. That's how any modern operating system works. It uses up available memory, because when applications run out of memory, they run faster. So it uses up all the available memory. And then if some other application comes along and says, "Well, I need some memory, please," it frees it up. This is especially true in Lion. Lion's actually done some really amazing things with this. But it's been true in every version of OS X. It's been true in Windows since Windows XP came out. But since Windows 2000 came, it's been true 11 years. this is how operating systems work. They use all the memory because not to would be to not use every resource available to it to be speedy. But when memory is needed by another program, it says gracefully, yeah, sure, have it back. It hasn't been since Windows 95 that this has been a problem. And yet there is a guy here selling an application that he knows does absolutely nothing. Well, it doesn't do nothing. It does something. It asks for memory, and the operating system, as it is designed to do, politely says, yes, sure, you can have that back. And then it puts a big picture on the screen, says, look, I got all this memory back. Well, of course you did. And people are buying this, and you should read the reviews. Of the 105 reviews, it's a 4.5 star rating. 75 of them are 5-star. Now, I have to think that at least half of those are the developer itself, himself. Awesome app. Fast developer response. This app is awesome. It really does free up your RAM. Now, here's the one where there's a lot of voodoo in computing, and I personally have noticed a huge difference in my computer's performance. No. No. But I have to say, I'll be honest with you. My car always runs better after car wash. Have you noticed that? It does. It just seems peppier, faster. Our brains are just... we're tricked easily by things like that. It's called the placebo effect. And it's well known. A placebo is a sugar pill often used to test the effectiveness of medicines. They'll do what they call a double-blind test, where they give some patients a real medicine and some patients a sugar pill. And in many cases, the sugar pill works as well as the real medicine with no side effects. Because it's sugar! Unbelievable. This 99-cent program. I can only imagine how many people must have bought this. Millions. This guy's probably made more than $1 million on a program that literally does nothing. And it reminded me of the voodoo, and it's been going on for years, as long as it's been computers, because you know what? We don't really, most of us, understand how a computer works. And so I've heard, I can't tell you how many stories I've heard, some of them on very reputable computer shows, not this one. You might as well say, well, take a chicken, turn around 4 times, and jump up and down. Amazing! It's all better! Things from registry cleaners, disk defragmenters, memory adjusters. There's a lot of stuff out there. And the placebo effect really works. You run it and it just seems better. Just like my car runs better after a car wash. It really does. It really does. But these programs do nothing. And I am surprised in this day and age. First of all, Apple, what the heck? Apple, you're actually approving this program? Aren't you supposed to check every program? I guess if the program does what it says it does. Let me just look in the claims. Do they claim that it helps anything? They say it's easy to use. It starts automatically at login. Well, that's even stupider. That's even dumber. There's no memory to clean at login. It starts fresh. Your memory's empty when you start. Hide dock icon. That's good. Growl integration. You know what's interesting? He doesn't claim that it does anything. He says, click optimize memory to free memory. Yes. It's a simple application to free memory. Yes. Maybe that's why Apple approved it. It doesn't actually claim to do anything but what it does, which is free memory. Which you don't need. Support for Lion. Lion's even better. We'll talk about Lion. I'm off my horse. Folks, you don't need these utilities, these magical utilities. There's a lot of them. There's some controversy over registry cleaners on Windows. I say do not ever use them. You do not need them. It makes you feel better, like you're tidying up somehow. But registry cleaners do not improve your system's performance. It's in your head. And there are people selling on television all the time, you know, these one-button-click speed-up programs. Most of the time, they don't do anything either. They really don't. You're wasting your money. Please, don't waste your money on this stuff. People love their registry cleaners. CCleaner is a nice program. Don't use it. You don't need it. And if you disagree, I would love to hear from you. 8888 Ask Leo. You can explain to me why that makes a difference. Explain to me, please. 888-827-5536. It's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. Outside the U.S., you can use Skype app to call me. It's toll-free. I'd love to hear from you. Let's talk tech. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, CCleaner does something. The question is whether you need what it does. And I say no, and I think the risk of doing a registry cleaner is much higher.
The beach, a national park, maybe a putative staycation. Benefit. Regardless of what
you're
doing
this summer.
So let
me talk to you a little bit about Netflix, and we'll get ready for our second call here, our first call, actually. You are a Netflix member, right? You do have a Netflix account, right? I don't really need to tell you about Netflix. There's been a lot of talk about Netflix increase in price. Well, let me tell you something. If you're price sensitive, there's no better deal for entertainment than Netflix and their Watch Instantly. Have you tried this yet? You can try it free for 30 days. Netflix.com/twit. I watch it every. I am not kidding. Every night I go home. I'm going to have to cut the cable because there's no reason when I go to Netflix.com and I click the Watch Instantly tab and you just look at the movies, the TV shows. I told you the other night my daughter and I, we watched four old episodes of The Office because we were in the mood to laugh, and boy, did we laugh. And this is all free, no ads. It streams instantly, and not just to your Mac or PC. It streams to your iPad, your iPhone, your iPod Touch with Wi-Fi. Now, I think there's 24 Android devices, including tablets, it streams to now. Ally McBeal, I haven't seen that show in ages. Remember that? That's one of the things I like about Netflix streaming is stuff that you probably wouldn't go to the movie store to rent or get on a DVD to rent, but you just kind of say, well, it'd be fun to watch an episode of that again. And it's easy. And you get tired of it, you stop it, and you watch it on something else. I use a Roku box to watch on my TV, but you can also use your PS3, your Xbox 360, your Nintendo Wii. What else is plays it? There's a lot of different devices. Many TVs and Blu-ray players now have it. Oh, remember this movie? What a great movie. Revenge of the Nerds. Now, admittedly, kind of, you know, a trashy movie. Now, here's an Academy Award-winning movie, Raging Bull, right next to each other. Movies from the 80s. Die Hard. Old movies, Gentlemen Prefer Blondes. All of the TV shows for Star Trek, from the original series through Voyager, are on here. The original series, it's the HD update of it that's incredible. I was watching that the other night. I forgot how hokey those shows were. But it's so fun. Give it a try. $7.99. Now, if you're already a Netflix member, you don't have to do anything. Just click that Watch Instantly tab. If you have a friend or a family member who's not yet savvy to what a great deal this is, send them to Netflix.com/twit. You'll be helping me out. You'll be helping them out. Look at all these old Saturday Night Live episodes. The 70s. There's like hundreds of episodes in here. Netflix.com/twit. We thank them for their support. They make the Tech Guy podcast possible. Yeah. The memory remains. A little of Metallica to start off our Saturday morning Tech Guy show. The reason Kyle is playing this, and you have to understand, every single song Kyle plays will have a meaning, will have a story, will have a tale to tell, because Kyle's just that kind of guy, is because this is the second to last show, Tech Guy show, out of this studio, the Tech Guy Labs. I've been here since 2004. It's been a great home for our show. I started doing the radio show all by myself. It's a little story about the Tech Guy Labs. Cottage that was built about 120 years ago as a wedding gift by a Northern California lumber baron whose daughter was getting married. He has a big mansion next door. That's been turned into office space since then, obviously. But he has a big mansion, beautiful mansion next door. And then he built this little cottage for his daughter when she got married as a wedding gift. And because he was a lumber baron, it's beautifully paneled in redwood. I mean, it's just a gorgeous little place. It's been through a few changes. It was a bed and breakfast, as was the mansion next door for a while, and turned into offices about a decade ago. And I was looking for a place to do the Tech Guy show. I was doing it out of my house. A lot of times radio people now, they work out of their house because technology makes it possible, and that's cool. But I found that the short commute was not conducive to a good program. I'd get up in my jammies, and I'd shuffle into the home office and do the show, and I'd be, hey, well, good to see you. Yeah. It wasn't, it didn't feel like work. So I said, I need an office. I need to do this outside of the house. So we found this little cottage. My wife did, actually. She was looking around our small town, Petaluma, in the wine country of Northern California. And she said, oh, you're going to love this. It's cute. It's so I was in the attic up here. Sweltering hot, little attic, little tiny room. It was probably 8 feet by 8 feet. Tiny little room. But, I radio show, didn't need much. Microphone, headphones. That's about it. A wall to look at. I'm set. I could do a radio show. So that's all we really needed. But as time went by, I got bored with just doing, just working weekends. That seemed too easy. And I didn't have anything else to do. So we started to, during the week, I'd say, well, I got all this gear here. Maybe I should do some podcasts. Little did I know. So the podcasts have kind of grown. I think I do 10 shows a week now. And I started a podcast network that does about 25 shows a week. We probably do 40 or 50 hours of programming a week. It's growing and growing. Now it's live video and, well, additional audio. And we just frankly went from me by myself to 18 employees. We slowly took over this cottage, but look at this isn't that big a space. We've been jammed in here. So I finally said, I got to get a bigger place. And my CEO, the woman who writes the checks, Lisa, said, okay, well, I found a spot for us down the street. Two blocks away. We're going from how many square feet is this? 1,800?
About
1,800 square feet to about 9,400 square feet plus a 6,500 square foot basement. So well over 15,000 square feet. It's like nine times bigger.
Awesome. And we're already used all the space.
And we've already used all the space up. We filled it up. You know how... the work expands to fill the time allotted to it? Yes. Same thing with office space. We filled it up. We're already looking for new space. No, we're not. But we've done a beautiful job. I put well over, well, almost, I don't even want to say it, almost $1 million into this thing. Beautiful, most beautiful space you ever saw. So the Tech Guy Labs, the movers came yesterday. I am back here sitting with a microphone looking at the wall. There's nothing else anymore. It's like back to the old days. I should have gone upstairs in the attic. But that's because this is the second to last show coming out of the old Tech Guy Labs. And we are moving down the street, moving on up to the north side. And we will have a whole new facility. Of course, it's radio, so you won't know. It'll sound exactly the same. But it will be a big improvement, and the podcast will look a lot better. And if you do watch the video, one of the things I decided to do, I didn't want to discombobulate people who watch the video of the radio show. So not only will the radio show sound the same, but the video might look pretty similar because we've duplicated the room that I'm doing this show from. We've actually duplicated in a small corner of the big space in the new studio. So in effect, the Tech Guy Labs continues on in its own little glass-enclosed terrarium. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the number. Kyle, who was it? The first call? I'm sorry.
Line 3, Diane.
Diane on line 3. Hi, Diane. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. I need your help.
Yes.
I have an LG Quantum Windows phone.
Okay.
And when I take video with it, the only way to get the video off my phone is to download the Zoom software. And then the Zoom software will save it in my computer in a folder as an MP4. But somehow that MP4 can't be viewed by anything other than the Zoom software. I spent lots of time with Microsoft and Zoom on the phone. They don't have any idea how, if I email it to someone, how they can view it. So I don't know how to convert it or what to do with that MP4 video that I took off my LG Quantum phone.
I don't blame you. This LG Quantum is the new Windows Phone 7 software. And that's why she says Zoom software. So it's how do you like it, first of all? It's a nice phone, isn't it?
Oh, I really like the phone.
Yeah.
But this is a problem because these videos that I take out in the field need to be sent to a client for viewing and sometimes to a judge to be viewed. So
oh, great.
What am I going to do, send my phone to the judge so he can view it? Right
here,
phone?
Your Honor. what are you, a private investigator? What are you doing?
Well, let's just say that I have a fun job.
Wow. And she's using the phone, which, by the way, is a testament. I bet you used to use a video camera. I mean, these phones, the quality is great. So here's the problem in general with phones.
Video camera too.
Yeah, you still use a video camera. Yeah, so yeah. Here's the problem. The most phones do not record in a full-fledged, high-quality video codec because they don't have the horsepower to do it. So what this phone is almost certainly recording in is a format called 3GP or 3GPP. It's storing it in an MPEG-4 envelope. And that's what's deceptive. You think, oh, well, I should be able to play this video on anything that could play an MPEG-4. Well, no, because the codec, the compression decompression software, has to be included on whatever you're using as playback. So I think that it's mere, I believe, not having used this phone, first of all, it's a little annoying. This is a problem Microsoft knows about and has had for some time with its Windows phones. On a normal phone, well, actually, I shouldn't say normal. You can't do it on the iPhone either. But on an Android phone, for instance, you should just be able to open the phone as a USB device and pull that video off. You shouldn't need any software.
Yeah, but we can't do that.
You can't do that on a Windows phone because Microsoft uses the SD card in that phone in an unusual, non-standard way. They know about this, and they're reportedly trying to fix it. But I don't know if Mango, the update, fixes it. Nevertheless, you're able to get it off, and you have a file on your computer. The problem is nothing plays that file except the Zune software.
Right, and there's no codecs available because we've already been through all that. I've already tried to go to their website and do all that. I spent a long time with their tech support people, and they actually...
Oh, they're morons. They don't know. So here's the deal. Don't listen to those morons. Listen to Leo. Listen to this moron.
I'm calling you because you're the best.
So first of all, I'd get a program just to see, just to validate what I'm saying. Oh, my goodness, the magic music. This is the worst tease ever. The answer, right after these words. Hang on, okay? Don't go away. Stay here, Diane. That's Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And I feel so bad. Diane was on the line from Oxnard, California. I was talking to Diane, and the magic sound happened, which says, get the heck out of Dodge, so I had to. And I left you hanging, Diane. I apologize. But the good news is I was able to use that time to do some research, confer with my brain. Many people don't know this, but I actually have output my brain into a computer, and it is in the chat room. There are 876 people there who compose my brain, and I can ask any question and instantly get a response. So here's the deal, as best me and my brain can figure it out, Diane. When you import the video via the Zune software, it does something called transcoding it. So it's not even in the format that the phone recorded it in, unfortunately, because you can't access the file directly, at least for right now. You have to use the Zune software.
Correct.
And when you import it via the Zune software, it might take a little time because what it's doing is it's transferring it to Windows Media Format. So it is an MPEG-4 or it is a WMV file. Here's what I would suggest. There's a free program called VLC. Have you ever heard of this program?
No.
Every Windows user should have it. You can get it free at videolan.org, videolan.org. It's written by French schoolboys. Actually, I just make that up because it sounds like it's kind of cool. It is a French school, however, that wrote it in the first place. It's kept up to date. It's an open source program. It is the most capable video player I've ever heard of. And everybody who uses Windows, it's available on Mac and Linux, too. Anybody who uses any computer should have it as a secondary video player because it can handle all these weird compression formats. So it'll open up. It should open up in VLC no matter what it's in. And then in VLC, you can command or control I and get info on what that video is. And it'll tell you how it's stored. And this is what you need. Every video that you watch on a computer is compressed in a format and then wrapped in an envelope. So it could be QuickTime, it could be AVI, it could be MP4. That's the envelope. And then we need to know inside that envelope what's the compression format. And VLC will for sure play it and tell you what codec. At that point, you can go onto the net and say, I need a converter for this codec to that. And the truth is, you could also give it to the court and say, Court, Your Honor, you have to use VLC.
Nice.
Well, now wait a minute. I'm being told that they used VLC in the courtroom during the Casey Anthony trial. So it's...
Really?
Yeah. So it may not be impossible, but you should be able to... I presume you're a well. Now this is another issue, and Dr. Mom's my part of my brain in the chat room is raising this. I don't know how much you're able. You know, can you manipulate the file in any way?
No.
It changes the data, doesn't it?
The tech I had on the phone with me from Microsoft called me back with what he had called an easy fix to try to rename it a WMV, and of course it wouldn't work.
Oh, he's a moron. I can't believe that.
Yeah,
just rename the file. That should tell it what to do.
Oh, yeah.
But I understand what he's saying, which is, oh, it should be a Windows Media file. You should be able to play it because it was named an MP4. You can't. No. But I'm just saying, will the court give you trouble if you transcode this into another format?
I don't know the answer to that.
You mean you're already doing so by importing it from the phone?
Right. My best answer is to not use this LG Quantum phone to record video any longer.
Well, I think if the court wants to see the original file, you're right. In other words, if you're using it in evidence, and the defense says, well, wait a minute. The file modification date on this file is 4 days later. I think you have a problem, because then there's the implication this file's been modified.
Right. And my main concern is, at this point, is the ones that I've taken without having this knowledge ahead of time.
You want to get them. Well, they've already been modified. They were modified the minute you took them off. The Zune software modified them. It didn't modify them, just ask a tech guy. It didn't modify the contents. It just changed the storage style.
And there's no other way to get these videos off but the Zune software.
Yeah, not on that phone, not yet. That's something Microsoft did that was kind of odd.
So once I find out what codecs was used by using Control-I, I can try to get that codecs or convert
you should
it.
Be, yeah, you can convert it. Again, I don't know if this is true, but Pismo in the chat room says it's recording in MPEG-4 video with AAC audio. I don't know if that's the case or not. The problem is then that the Zune software did something else to it, which we don't know. VLC will play it. You can then find out what it's recorded in and use another program to convert it to something that an AVI file or whatever it is that that you need to use it.
Okay.
And you should then be able to play it on any computer.
Thank you very, very much.
Yeah, I'm sorry that this is unfortunately, because of the way Windows Phone works, this is kind of a problem.
Yeah, I even went to the AT&T store because I said, you know what, this is the whole reason I bought this phone, and one of the main reasons, and what other options do you have to get me off of this phone?
Right. Yeah, I mean, the phone's a great phone. It's just that for the unique thing that you want to use it for, it may not be ideal. Pismo says he actually did this, so I think we can trust him. He said he took some video with his Windows phone. He imported it using the Zune software. He then opened it in this program that I'm telling you about, VLC. It was, in fact, an MPEG-4 video. Now, that's good news, because that's a very standard format that you should be able to either convert or play back on almost any machine, given the right software to play it back.
Yeah, the thing that I found quite interesting was that the Windows Media Player doesn't even support it. I can't even play it in Windows Media Player. Go figure, huh?
Now, that's bizarre.
I told the tech guy, I said, it won't. The Windows, and I even uploaded the very most recent update. Why wouldn't Windows Media Player play the format that comes off the Windows phone?
The other thing you can do is, I'm pretty sure that Zune software will burn a DVD for you.
But then how do I play it?
It's a normal DVD.
I'm not going to recognize it.
No, it's a normal DVD.
And they'll
It'll play in a DVD player. It'll play in a DVD player, which I imagine the court would love.
I'll try that. I'll see if it works. But you can't even drag it off the Zune software. You can't. There's no drag possibilities.
Thank you,
at
Microsoft.
All.
They're trying to make it easy. You understand that this is from their point of view. Oh, well, it's easier this way.
Okay.
There is a definite disconnect between easy and powerful. I mean, look at the iPad. You can't do anything with the iPad, but that's easier for people. Now, there is a Windows 7 codec pack you can download. I'll put a link to this in the show notes as well. It's Windows 7 codecs. Codex.com. And it is a free package of codecs that will expand the capability of your machine so at least you can play it. But again, if you're going to give this to somebody, I think the best thing to do is burn a DVD out of it. Because that's a universal format.
Thank you, Leo.
Thank you, Diane. I appreciate it. What do you think she does? You know why? I think you know why she wants to use a phone. Because it's unobtrusive. So if you're a private investigator, let's say, and you need to shoot videos, you're not going to use a big video camera. Because it's obvious what you're up to. But you got your little phone here. You look like a tourist.
Oh, don't mind me. It's a beautiful view. I just want to... This hotel is fascinating. I just want to get the picture of the front of the hotel.
Nobody's going to think you're doing anything. So that's why, right? 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. Your call's next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. What are you saying? That we need a Swiffer in here to clean up the studio? Is that what you're saying, Kyle? It's not gonna. It ain't gonna take a Swiffer.
Gonna miss it. Misses the mop.
We're gonna need the mop and the Swiffer. Don't worry, the mop will have a job. Isn't that sad that this great song by Player, which was a hit when in 1978 or something, is now no longer remembered as a hit song? It's only remembered as the theme to the Swiffer commercial. Is it a Swiffer? Or some... It's some mop, right? Some mop.
Swiffer.
It is a Swiffer. I used to work with a woman, Kat Schwartz, who swears she had invented the Swiffer. That she was working at a company in a boardroom, and she said, you know, what we need to do is... Whatever the Swiffer is, I don't even... It's some sort of mopping thing, right? She invented it, and they said, great idea, and never paid her anything. Well, Kat, if you're listening, I believe you. I do. Josh is on the line from Georgia. Hi, Josh. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. What a pleasure to be able to talk to you. Big fan.
Thank you, sir.
I've actually been able to meet you a couple times out there in Petaluma, and the last time I was able to meet you, you were cruising over my head at South by Southwest.
Ah! That was fun. Was that this year or the year before?
This year.
Yeah, this year we did... So what he's talking about is... we were covering South by Southwest, which is a wonderful trade show in Austin every spring. I just love it. We'll do it again this year. And I was there with my cameras, my portable cameras, and my team. And... 2 years ago, I went on stage with my friends Kevin Rose and Alex Albrecht. They do a show called Dignation. They had, I think, 5,000 screaming, rabid fans in the audience. And they said, Leo, you should crowd surf. And I foolishly said, okay, and leapt into the crowd with my camera. And they buoyed me up and carried me around. I got the world's record, according to the Universal Record Database, URDB, for the world's longest live-streamed crowd surf. Then the following year, we had to do it again. So, but this time it was all of us. It was like six people. And I don't know what they almost dropped me a few times. I hope it wasn't you who almost dropped me, Josh. I hope I didn't land on your head.
I'm actually the guy that sent you a picture of it. I'm Josh Johnson.
Josh is the Instagram man.
The Insta Tips Instagram guy, yeah. So I've been listening for so long and appreciating the show and thought I'd ought to call in since I do have a question.
Well, first of all, let me just give you props and kudos because you just are fantastic. Josh is not only a great photographer, but he also helps other photographers. If you've ever used the iPhone app Instagram, you certainly know his name. He does Insta Tips, so you can look for his pictures. They have a little Dymo label across it. They say Insta Tips, which are really great tips for people to get great images on Instagram.
Yeah, I've been flattered that you've noticed. Two days ago, actually, past 50,000 people following.
Wow.
In less than a year. So it's kind of a testament to what an idea coupled with social media, the internet can do quickly, you know. So
it's very powerful because I don't know how well known you are in photography circles, but I suspect
a guy out in Georgia that's a wedding photographer, yeah, that had an idea. Hey, what if I put a tip out every once in a while on this cool Instagram thing, and it just blew up? So if you've got an idea, go for it.
Yeah, no, I think this is a very good example of the power of the new media. And I have another example of a photographer, which I'll tell you about in a second. But let me ask you a question, because, you know, Justin Bieber just joined Instagram. He posted a picture of L.A. All he's done is one picture, L.A. traffic. And I bet he's already beat you in the number of followers, hasn't he?
I've been trying to figure out how to get my daughter, she's 5, in Instagram and photography, and you just solved my problem.
Justin's on it. This is unfortunately what happens to a lot of these social networks. It certainly happened to Twitter, where you have a great social network, where it's a great community of people like you, and people know you, and it really feels kind of homey and small. It's not that small, obviously. There's millions of users, but it's homey. And then along comes a celebrity, a superstar like Justin Bieber, and the whole thing erupts, and it loses, unfortunately, it loses a little bit of its homey feel. Certainly happened on Twitter.
We'll see what happens. In the last year, Instagram has still definitely kept its homey feel, even passing 5 million, 6 million users.
Yeah. Instagram is really Twitter for photos, for people who don't know. So, and this is how, I guess, a network can kind of preserve its homey feel. You don't have to follow Justin Bieber. You don't have to see any Justin Bieber noise, really. You just follow Josh and a handful of other people, and you see their pictures, and it's as if it is a small community, even though there are obviously many others in it.
It's amazing. So 2 days ago, for example, we do these, I call them forums, where I say, for example, everybody, let's put up a red picture today. Within 2 hours, 5,000 people had submitted a red image of some
sort.
Isn't
that great?
So it's very, very interactive and a lot of fun. And I'm just having a blast on it. So, but the meat of my question was, I've created an ebook about iPhone photography, about phone photography, and I just need to know now what. Basically, it's on Microsoft Word. I created it on my Mac in Word. And
here's what I would do. Go to createspace.com. Okay. This is Amazon's e-publishing site. Who has the biggest e-pub reader in the world? Amazon, the Kindle, right? Now, the Kindle's not so great for what you're doing, because I presume you have pictures in there.
That's right.
Yeah, so on the Kindle, they'll be black and white at best and grainy. But it doesn't matter, because they're going to allow you to also create a color version with full images. They allow you to sell these EPUBs on Amazon directly as well. It's free to use. They do have paid services. But there are a lot of people using this to self-publish ebooks. I think, Josh, you are again on the cutting edge. This is the future of publishing, period. And it doesn't, not just for people like me and Josh, who nobody ever heard of, but for Danielle Steele and everybody else, because publishing it yourself means you set the price. There are people, many people now, who have sold millions of buck books, you know, $1 books. Now, you might say, well, you know, a dollar, how could she make money? Because she makes 70% of that million. She made a lot of money. So the whole thing changes. And ebooks tend to be less expensive. You'll probably sell your book, Josh, for 99 cents, I would guess, or $1.99 at most, right?
I haven't really decided yet.
Because cheap doesn't mean you won't sell a lot of them. People, there's the expectation on ebooks that they're inexpensive. Well, they should be. No trees died to make this book. And
right.
Yet you get all the value, maybe even more so, because it's on your computer. You can read it. You can see the images. So I think there's a huge opportunity.
So I would direct my audience to Amazon purchase?
Amazon will help you turn it into a ebook that you can sell more than just Amazon. You certainly want to sell it on Amazon. That's the big place, right?
Got it.
That's the iTunes of books. You know, I mean, if you're a musician, you got to sell on iTunes. If you're a publisher, a book, a writer, you got to sell on Amazon. I mean, just period. So they'll help you do that. But they you can make a print book with it if you really want to. They can print on demand, which is nice because you don't print one book more than you sell. You know, one of the big costs of books, I know because I've written 13 books, every one of them has ended up remaindered, you know, in the bookstore. 99 cents, you get Leo's book because we couldn't sell this thing. That's what happens to books. And that's the big cost of books is they try to print just as many as are needed, but they always overdo it. So
it.
This prints exactly. It's on demand. You don't print it till you sell it.
If
this is, and you still have an ebook version that you sell on Amazon. You can sell it in other places. It's in a form. Amazon's moving to a EPUB form that is standard. It used a non-standard format. They're moving to EPUB, which is great. This is the way to do it now. And you know, it's funny. I'll give you an example. Jerry Pournelle, great science fiction author. He has made millions, sold millions of books. He's one of the greatest science fiction authors living. He also, I might say, tip of the hat, is a listener to the show. We love Jerry. He's also back writing on Byte magazine at Byte.com. We love that. But Jerry's daughter, so Jerry wrote a very well-known sci-fi book. Jerry's daughter wrote kind of a follow-on to that book. And unlike her dad, instead of selling that book, you know, going to Simon & Schuster and getting an advance and getting royalties on the book, she sold it online for 99, I think it was 99 cents. It's a book about the Audis. She's made tons of money, and Jerry, it opened Jerry's eyes. He said, what have I been doing all these years? Josh, that's the solution. CreateSpace.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, a good day to you. Leo Laporte here, the tech guy, and it's time to talk technology. 8888 Ask Leo is my phone number. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S., 888-827-5536. Outside the U.S., you could Skype me. Just use Skype out and call that toll free number. It won't cost you a penny. We were talking before the break with Josh Johnson, a wedding photographer who has really made a name for himself using social media, using Instagram, which is an iPhone app, and has, you know, garnered 50,000 followers on Instagram and made a name for himself. And it's really kind of amazing to see that happen using these social networks. And it made me think of a good friend of mine, Trey Ratcliffe. Now, Trey is a pretty well-known photographer in Austin, Texas. He's certainly well-known among geeks because he is, well, he's a great photographer, but he's also kind of famous for teaching people how to use a computer-based photographic technique called HDR, high dynamic range. You use Photoshop to take a picture, take several images from a picture and make it just pop. So Trey's become very well known for HDR. And he's also smart. I mean, he's always published a photo a day on Facebook. He's published photos on Twitter. He's used the social media. But along comes this new Google social network called Google Plus. You've heard about it, right? It's very fast growing. We estimate now 18 million people in 3 weeks. And it's still not open to the public. You still have to get somebody to invite you, which is smart. Google does it that way. They say, well, we're trying. We're testing out the software. And I'm sure that that's the case. But by doing so, they also create a real pent-up demand for the invites, right? They did this with Gmail. People were selling Gmail invites on eBay for hundreds of dollars. Same thing's happening with Google+. 18 million people on Google+. So Trey has started posting a photo a day on Google+. Now, it's really worked for him because Google+, unlike Facebook, unlike Twitter, really highlights these photos. And when you click on one of his photos, Google Plus has the most amazing lightbox facility. It shows it on a darkened page, full screen, with the comments, with a kind of little left arrow that lets you look at other pictures Trey's done. So for a photographer, Google Plus, it turns out, intentionally on Google's part or not, turns out to be a very good platform. Well, Trey has used this to get 44,000 followers in 3 weeks. And I think in many ways make himself the premier photographer on Google+. And in some ways grow his audience phenomenally, I think. And I bet you Trey would agree. This has been huge for him. He's now started posting videos on how to make these kinds of images that he makes. So he actually gives you, for free, kind of the steps. And then pushes you back to his website where he does sell DVDs of this. You know, he makes money on it indirectly. That's, by the way, one of the lessons that this social media gives you is that if you give stuff away on social media, you build an audience. And an audience that you can then later use to make money. If you don't start out being greedy and say, and a lot of photographers do this. No, you can't look at my pictures. No, I'm going to put low quality versions out. No, I'm not going to tell you how I do it. It turns out that's wrong. It's just like the music industry that said, nah, they're just going to steal our music. They're going to rob us blind. We're not going to use the internet. Now, I think they've learned their lesson. If you use these social networks and the internet appropriately to give away stuff, to be generous, Trey's a generous guy, it will come back to you. It's biblical. Cast your loaf upon the waters, and it will come back to you a thousandfold. We've known this for 2,000 years. But I can't think of a more dramatic, direct example of this than people like Josh Johnson on Instagram, Trey Ratcliffe on Google+, photographers who have been incredibly generous, and by doing so have created an audience for themselves and a way to make a living. And I think in Trey's case, probably a very good living. He does workshops, he sells DVDs, he sells books, and you know, those make him money. But he gives away images, he gives away how to do it, he makes videos that anybody can watch for free. And by doing so, I think he creates an audience. He creates a name. It really works. So it's something to consider if you want to start using these digital tools in your art, your trade, your profession. Think about that. That these are ways to not. And of course, you know, if you're a private investigator, probably you don't want to post those videos of the wayward husband on Google+. That's not what I'm talking about. But if you do, if you write, if you paint, if you take photographs, if you make music, if you create an art form of some kind, think about using these new social media, Facebook, Twitter, Google+, to share yourself, to give yourself away, and to create really an audience for yourself that you can, and I hate to use the word monetize. I only say this because I know people then have the concern, well, if I give this all away, I still need to pay the rent. The landlord's not giving me the place for free. The grocery store doesn't give me my meals for free. I have to live. And so there's this fear, if I give all this stuff away, how am I going to live? But I think you have to trust, because it turns out Jesus was right. And I'm not turning this into a sermon. But there is something to be said for this idea of cast your loaf upon the waters. Give it away, because it will come back to you. It really does. And it is a little bit of a leap of faith. It is a little bit of a leap of faith. You have to say, gosh, I'm going to give this away, but this is what I've been charging for. Try it. And I think that, you know, when Josh Johnson's saying, you know, I got this 99-cent ebook, well, he's been giving away, he's built a name for himself by giving away these tips for over a year. And yeah, you can cash in a little bit on this. Everybody understands the need to make a living. So it's okay to make it, say, you know, I've got all these tips. For your convenience, I've compiled this into a 99-cent book. Make it inexpensive. Make it widely available. Get it out to as many people as possible. And say, this is for your convenience. You can get all these tips for free. Just follow me on Instagram. But I put it together in a book that might be convenient for you. And people will pay for that. Absolutely, people will. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. If you want to talk about this or any other problem you have with technology or solution to, let's go to Phoenix, Arizona. Neil is on the line. Hi, Neil. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Good morning, Leo. How are you?
Good morning. Thanks for calling.
Well, my pleasure. I always enjoy your show and always had an interest in radio myself, as a matter of fact, over the years. I never knew how to get into it, but that's not why I'm calling today.
Although, actually, I have to say, radio is where I learned give it away, right?
Exactly.
Give it away.
I never knew when I grew up. We're about the same age, and I always was told I had a good radio voice, so to speak, but never knew how to get into it. I always liked radio. But,
yeah, well, it's changed. You know, it's much easier now. When I started in radio in 1976, oh my God, 35 years ago, I had to pound the pavement and convince some station to give this callow youth who kind of sounded like this a chance to get on the air. You had to pay your dues. Remember that? We said pay your dues. In the digital era, paying your dues is a little bit different. Now you make a podcast. You can have, you make your own radio show. You make a podcast, but nobody will listen to it for the first 5 years. But that's so how you pay your dues now is you keep making it. You keep doing it. You keep putting it out there. You keep giving it away till somebody starts buying.
Right. Well, that's great. Well, I'll have to think about that. What I was actually calling on, Leo, is about, I know you haven't gotten to it yet, but I think you actually had a lot to say last week when you commented about Apple needed to upgrade their Mac Mini, and I think you said the MacBook Air.
Oh, yeah, the new Mac Mini is sweet.
Right. Now, I have a Mac Mini from the middle 7 model, the 1.83 gigahertz,
yeah.
So if you're 80 gigabyte hard drive.
I have about a half dozen of those.
Right.
I use the minis everywhere I want a little computer. I use Mac Minis. Servers, we use it to stream. They're great little devices.
Exactly. But I think it's time to move up in terms of probably hard drive space, definitely.
Well, hang on. Let's talk about your next Mac. How about that? Right after the break. Leo Laporte, The Tech Guy. You know, there's something about Amazing Grace on the bagpipes that just brings tears to the eyes for a variety of reasons. Kyle is playing that because we've been talking about how we're going to make the transition from the old studio, which I'm in right now, to the new studio. Tomorrow we move the Tech Guy Labs up the street, two blocks, not far, to the new, we call it the Brick House Studios, that are just gorgeous studios, most beautiful studios I've ever worked in. I built them myself for myself, and I'm just really thrilled about this. And with the help of a lot of listeners who've purchased bricks, we have a wall of honor, and people are buying bricks to go on the wall of honor. And we've sold over 1,000. So I thank you all who've bought bricks to help us build this new studio. So there's a transition at the end of the show tomorrow. I need to shut this studio down, which I will. I'll turn out the lights. Lock the door, and walk up the street. And we're going to make a little parade of it. We've got a big ribbon and the giant scissors. We're going to do a ribbon cutting. And I think there's about 100 people who'll be coming to watch the festivities and so forth. And I thought it'd be nice to have a little parade. Now, I talked to the city, and they said, as long as you stay on the sidewalk and obey traffic laws, you don't need a permit. So it's a small parade. I don't mean down the middle. They wouldn't give us a permit down the middle of the street. We did try to get a permit down the middle of the street, and they wouldn't because they said it's an important street. We can't block it. It's too important. We can't block it. So I guess we'll go on the sidewalk and we'll obey all traffic laws. We have to cross a street, but there's a stop sign. But it would be so nice to have a bagpiper leading the way. Not Amazing Grace, though. Can we play, I don't know, Scotland the Brave or something? Not Amazing Grace. That's a little mournful. 8888 Ask Leo. I've been talking to Neil in Phoenix, Arizona. He's ready to upgrade. He's looking at the new Mac hardware that came out last week. Actually, this week, didn't it? That's right. Came out with Lion. So we have new MacBook Airs, which Apple believes, and I think Apple's right, will be their number one selling Mac going forward. I have the MacBook Air that came out in October, and I just adore it. They've also shipped, interestingly, new Mac Minis. And I think the reason is this is the lowest cost Mac you can get. It's the entry-level Macintosh for people who aren't really sure they want to get a Mac. You know, you're competing in a space where you can get PCs, Windows PCs, for $300, $400. Apple doesn't ever want to sell a computer that cheaply, but they do sell these Mac Minis for as little as $600. So is that what you're looking at, Neil?
Potentially, but I'd probably want an upgraded model. For example, I'd probably want the 750-gig hard drive and a little bit faster processor and the 4 gigabytes of RAM.
Yeah, which then now takes you pretty much over $1,000 at that point.
Right, and that's my dilemma is, at that price point, am I better off to say, well, I'll just go with an iMac instead at a similar price point?
There are real advantages to going with an iMac. For one thing, you get a screen. The Mac Mini is, in fact, look what you give up on the Mac Mini. There's no optical drive. There's no DVD player. There's no DVD recorder. That's why it's so thin and small. Yes, you can put two hard drives in it, oddly enough. I'm not sure I'd recommend that, but you could. But you still have to supply not just the screen, but the mouse and the keyboard. They're aiming the Mini at, I think, PC users who already have a screen, mouse, and keyboard and want to save money. My suggestion is not to load up on what's inside the box. But remember that you have very high-speed ports on the box. You have Thunderbolt. If you want more storage, the best way, in my opinion, to add storage is with an external drive, as needed. It'll be cheaper. You could do it later. And with Thunderbolt, it'll be just as fast, if not faster, than an internal drive.
So you'd recommend the base model Mac? Mac, I already have the 24-inch monitor because I have a Mac Mini now. So I have
The only upgrade I might make is RAM because they start at 2 gigs, which I think is too small. I think you want 4 gigs of RAM for most users. And Apple charges $100 for that upgrade. That's it's more than it would cost if you went out and got it. The good news about these new Mac Minis is you don't need a putty knife to open them. You can they have a port for adding RAM, so it's easy to add RAM. So even with that, you could decide to get the cheapest Mac Mini, the base model, and then upgrade as needed. The base model, which is the $600 model, comes with 2 gigs of RAM. Yeah, that's light, but doable. $100 more, you can get 4 gigs, but you could add those put 4 gigs in probably for $60 or $70. The hard drive it comes with is really a slow hard drive. It's a 5400 RPM hard drive. That's as slow as you can get. That makes sense because you also want to keep it cool. That's a tight case, as you know, and it gets pretty hot, doesn't it?
Well, this one's kept pretty cool, actually. It's not really been...
Oh, that's good. Mine gets hot. But the more... In other words, the more you put inside that case, the hotter it's going to get. That's why they don't stock a large, fast drive. I would suggest going with what's in it, and eventually you're not even going to use that internal drive except maybe for backup.
Perhaps. The only thing I have that I run on it, Leo, probably that's the biggest, probably the most powerful program I run there, like Aperture 3.
Well, you want a big, fast hard drive for Aperture 3, you bet.
So you'd want to get the larger capacity drive.
No, I would say do not. I would say get the stock one. The only change you might want to make is a larger RAM and then get an external drive. Now, unfortunately, Thunderbolt drives aren't available yet, although they're coming very soon. Because that's the way you want to connect an external drive on this thing. Thunderbolt is faster than any other connection out there. Faster than FireWire 800. Much faster than USB 3. It's 10 gigabits per channel. So it's faster than any drive out there. So what I would suggest is getting the base model. Live with it as long as you can. Once Thunderbolt external drives come out, get a Thunderbolt terabyte or 2 terabytes, or get a RAID solution, a Drobo-style solution or a RAID box. Because if you're a photographer, it sounds like.
Not professionally, but I like to use the powerful software.
Yeah.
I like to take pictures. I mean, that's probably the most intensive task. I don't do gaming, for example, on myself, but I do surf the web, emails, the usual tasks, and I like to take pictures.
So the processor speed is fine. I mean, it's not the fastest, but these i5s are really nice processors. I wouldn't upgrade the processor. You might upgrade the RAM if you don't want to do it yourself. So that now we're talking $699, $700. You're going to have to get the super drive because it has no DVD player or recorder in it. I don't know if you use that or not. If you don't use it, look, I use a MacBook Air. It doesn't have an external drive either. But when I wanted to get Windows on this Air for a dual boot, I had to get the external drive, $79. This is how they keep that price low. Apple doesn't sell. Apple always has at least a 50% markup. They are not like the PC world where they sell stuff with razor-thin profit. They make a lot of money. In fact, somebody did an analysis that said HP has to sell 7 computers to make as much money on it as Apple does 1 computer. 7 to 1. So, but you pay for it, but I think you're getting something valuable. But what I would suggest is start with the base model, and then it's easy to add more RAM. It's easy to add more hard drive. What you can't do is get a faster processor in there. So that's the lack of upgrade there. By the way, also the video card is fairly, it uses the Intel built-in video. So which by the way uses your RAM. That's why you want 4 gigs. And it's not super fast. I think it's fast enough for Aperture. I think it'd be fine for Aperture.
Well, yeah, thanks for all the tips. I'd give you good tips on how much money to put in.
I'm saving you money, Neil, up front, because you'll spend it as you need it down the road. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Stream Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Phone number 8888-ASK-LEO. Back to the phones we go with Valerie in Torrance, California, listening on the great KFI. Hi, Valerie. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo.
Hey.
Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you.
I run a small business, and I set up and run a network that I've followed a lot of your tips and recommendations over the years. ESET Nod32, one being one that really stands out.
Good.
And I have two Win XP Pro machines currently networked, and I'm adding Win 7 Pro. In fact, I just took delivery of a Dell machine. I'm waiting to talk to you before I set it up.
I do love those Dell machines. It's what we use almost entirely in the business operation for my company. It's a good choice for business, especially. They have good business support, good quality stuff.
Well, it had what I needed at the price I could afford.
Exactly.
So.
Yeah. No, I like what Dell's does. I think they're a good choice for business.
Well, the new machine is a Win 7. The two machines I have networked now are Win XP Pro, and I have two questions about the network.
Okay.
First, I have read articles about Win XP Pro and Win 7 Pro and maybe not playing real nice as networked machines.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's XP's fault. Windows 7 is great.
Okay.
Huge improvement. You will be very glad you moved to Windows 7, and you might even, if those XP machines aren't too old, consider upgrading them.
Well, that's not in the budget yet, but I do have an...
Well, you don't need to get new hardware. I mean just getting Windows 7 for them.
Oh, yeah, I don't really...
Okay.
Really.
Yeah,
upgrade.
You know, this is one thing about Windows especially. It's funny because everybody on the Macintosh is probably downloading and installing Lion as we speak. Because their Apple culture is when the new version comes out every year, you get it. Windows culture is the exact opposite. You do not upgrade your operating system until you buy a new computer, and that's when you upgrade.
That's how I do it.
Yeah, that's how almost everybody does it in Windows.
Yeah. Anyway, so right now I have Network Magic Pro on the existing network. And, you know, in truth, I haven't spent a lot of time troubleshooting it. But at one time, everything worked. I could see every machine from every other machine and print from any machine to any printer and... That was the idea of the network.
Yeah, and Network Magic Pro, the idea of that is, oh, it's easy. You run this software, and it auto-configures everything.
Yeah, and so I bought into that. But
yeah, unfortunate. And it's a good solution for a shop like yours where you're the IT person, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
Yeah. And this is often the case in small business. You can't afford an IT person. It's not a bad idea if you're, in my opinion... instead of getting a software program like Network Magic Pro or Lantastic, which by the way is probably a better choice, is getting a guy once to come in and configure and set it up. There are plenty of IT consultants in Torrance who will come in and for not very much money, a few hundred bucks, come in and configure this all for you. And if it's done properly and done well, it'll be much more reliable, much more robust. He'll give you good advice about backup, about, you know, things, security. I understand, I'm a small businessman too, that it's not a high priority, except it should be.
Well, I sort of enjoy doing the work when I have
time. Oh, that's neat. I mean, I think that's great.
But my question really is, should I just kill the Network Magic and take it off the two existing machines?
Delete it. Now, what that means is you have to do this by hand.
Right.
But you will get a better result, I think. And more importantly, you'll understand what's going on. Network Magic Pro hides all the details from you.
Okay, so there isn't really an uninstall. It's going and just deleting files?
No, what I'm saying is that you don't know what it's done. You can uninstall it.
Okay.
But what will happen is it'll break your network.
Oh, yeah, no, I figured that.
And you're going to have to go back through it and figure out what happened. Is it a fairly simple network? You have a router to go to the internet, and all three machines connect to the router?
Right. And there's two printers, one that's on a local computer and one that's on the network.
Okay, the printers will be a little more tricky, but not hard, I don't think. I would, yeah, absolutely. I would start, I would uninstall it and start from scratch. It's not going to be difficult. You will set up all three computers for accessing the internet via DHCP, automatically letting the router configure them. They should be able to then see each other with sharing and so forth pretty straightforwardly. There are some security things you want to do. I would recommend a website called practicallynetworked.com.
Okay.
That will give you, it has a bunch of great tutorials on doing exactly this.
Oh, cool.
And there's some information that you should know, like you need a work group, you know, that all three are on and so forth. Then getting the printers working should be pretty simple. One will use printer sharing. One is just a networked printer you should be able to see. Windows 7 has some nice features to simplify this, particularly with file sharing. It has the home file sharing system that's really good. I think that it's doable. I don't think you have anything unusual or difficult to do. The biggest thing that you're going to want to do is secure it. And that's where you should read the articles on practicallynetworked.com about security. You're going to make sure the firewalls are turned on all three machines.
Very good with instructions.
Yeah. I think that that's a great site for learning everything you need.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. I'm glad that you want to do it yourself. The advantage of doing it yourself is you know it. The disadvantage is you might miss something critical that an expert would know about, but you wouldn't. But I think you sound like you want to do this, and I would do it. Do it on a weekend. Today's a good day, so that when work begins on Monday, it's working. Give yourself at least 2 days to troubleshoot it.
Yeah, that's the only way to do it.
Yep.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks for calling. I really appreciate it, Valerie. And I honor and admire your desire to do it yourself. I think that's the best way to go. And when you're a small business, you can do this. I had to let go. I was the IT guy for the first 5 employees. And then I had to let it go. And we found, you know, we're lucky. We found a small company in my area, a guy named Russell Tammany, a company called Exponentia. And this is what he does. He's a consulting IT professional. He comes into businesses, does the setup. You know, that may be a few hours or depending on how complicated, more than that. But that's a few $100. And then you do a contract, a yearly contract for maintenance. And that means you've got an IT guy or gal, a person. And you, of course, you got to find somebody who's good. But if you find somebody who's good and ask around, go to your local chamber, say who to, you know, talk to businesses in your area. Who do you use? Who do you like? Who do you recommend? The good people will surface very quickly. You'll know who they are right away. The name will come up again and again. Do it to satisfy whatever it is. We're having fun and going back into the vaults today. Kyle Benham on the music. Gina Yates on the phones today.
You got it.
Thank you, Gina. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the number. If you want to talk tech, Suzanne in Valencia, California, listening to the great KFI on Mothership. We survived Carmageddon, so I'm back on. Hey, Suzanne.
I was involved in Carmageddon last week. It was great. So
yeah, there were people. People set up a table and had dinner on the 405 illegally, but
yeah. Well, it wasn't bad traveling down, but I didn't take the 405. So
yeah, I'm sure the traffic is worse today than it was last Saturday. Let's put it that way.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah, isn't that funny? Everybody, you know, we should have Carmageddon every weekend. Just stay home. Listen to the show. So what can I do for you, Suzanne?
Well, I am needing a new laptop, and I need a 17-inch screen because I do a lot of split screen. I do a lot of genealogy, so I need something larger. And I have a Dell.
Let me just ask you a question, because I hate giant 17-inch laptops because they're so big. What if you got a smaller laptop but an external screen? So that when you wanted to do the genealogy, you had an even bigger screen, a 24-inch screen, or even more.
Okay.
Then, because one thing you can do with an external screen, and almost all laptops support this, is you can have a widescreen, a 16:9 screen, which would be great for split screen. So that's essentially, you know, kind of two side-by-side screens.
Okay. How do you plug in an extra screen?
Well, it just depends on which laptop you get, but almost all laptops now have a video connector. The Macs make it very easy because all the Mac big screens have just the Thunderbolt connector goes right on there. They have a little power cable and a USB. Actually, they don't even have the USB anymore. And so you don't even have to open up the laptop. When you get to the desk, you put it down. You connect those two connectors, and you're using the big screen. You can leave a keyboard and a mouse there, so you actually have a desktop. And then when you're done, you disconnect. Now, that's a Mac, but many PCs have similar kinds of docking solutions. Do you want to use Windows? Is that where your genealogy software is?
It is, and also we have – I do that, and I'm also wanting to do a lot of digitizing of old, like
– Oh, that's neat.
Videos.
Scanning, and, of course. So are you building a database, or do you have software that?
I have some software, and it's all it's all PC based.
What do you recommend, by the way? I'm just curious what you use.
Well, I don't know. My husband has Photoshop, so that's what I use.
Because there are programs out there that are designed to build a genealogical database with rich media, with photos and videos and stuff. And
That's not, I haven't really looked into a lot of those. I've been using one that's free, and you can do that and base it. And I know I'd love to get a Mac, but then that means a lot more expensive.
Yeah, no. I'm not going to make you get a Mac. I only mention that because that is that's kind of an example of the very elegant way to have a. Do you pick up this laptop and go somewhere, or you just have it on the desk all the time?
No, I do. I do travel with it.
Okay.
So I do.
That's where 17 inches just will kill you.
Well, I'm finding that my options are limited because it's a 17 inch by way of looking for different specs on them.
Right.
So
I think that's the case. I mean, I think that what a lot of laptop manufacturers have realized is that the market really isn't small and light.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'll tell you the laptop makers I like. And I don't know if... the first one I'd look at is Lenovo. I don't know if Lenovo's making a 17 anymore. Let me look.
Well, they do have a 17-inch.
Okay.
And the specs look pretty good. I was actually looking at...
The specs will be good because basically those size laptops are desktop replacements.
Okay.
They're not considered to be particularly portable. They can make them 8 pounds, which means they can have lots of battery. They can have, i5 processors. They're big.
Right. Well, the only downside to it is I think the RPM was 5400.
That's normal, and that's to keep heat down and power consumption. But I bet you can do a build to order that's larger.
No, I called.
They don't do a bigger one.
No, I called to you, and it's like the 17 inch. They do not build.
It's the way that it is.
The way that it is.
Yeah.
So, and I know that, Dell. Also has some
Dell would be the two choices, the companies I love the best for laptops or desktops for that matter, Dell and Lenovo. Lenovo's only laptops obviously, but Dell and Lenovo, excellent. So the Dell 17 would be fine. I have a Dell 16 that I love.
So with Dell, would you go with an Inspiron or would you go with
Well, the difference on those is more market that they're aiming at. Inspiron's aimed at business.
Okay.
And then, although now that I'm looking at it, Dell's even confused that. When you go to the Dell site, they say, well, is this for home or business? And then they walk you through it. What is the difference? It's the same process. It's kind of styling more than anything. And the kinds of things you can get in there. I think that, you're going to want a home laptop. That's the Inspiron 17R. The Latitudes are business. I'm sorry, the Inspirons are home. Oh, then they have the XPS. These are more higher-end performance machines.
Okay.
So it's really, I think you can almost do this by price. You'll see as the performance goes up, price goes up. The other thing, though, again, to consider is a smaller one that you can carry around more easily that has, and all the Dells will do this, has an external connector for a Dell 24. Dell even sells like docks to do this. So there's choices in the Dell line as well for a smaller, say a 15 or even smaller, that docks to a large monitor. The XPS 17, by the way, that'll have a faster drive. That'll have a 7200 RPM drive.
Okay.
That does matter. You're smart to look at that. In fact, I'll tell you the truth. I don't buy computers anymore that have spinning drives. I almost always, all my laptops, all my desktops now start with a solid state drive because it's so much faster. And the processor speeds we're seeing, you know, you'll see an increased speed in processor, but you won't feel it, but you really will feel a faster drive. It really does make a difference.
So what solid state drive are you?
Well, that's going to add a lot to the price.
Okay.
So I don't know if, you know, if you're price sensitive, you don't buy solid state drives.
So do you buy, I know they're talking about Core. Would you go
i5?
At least an i5.
Just an i5. The difference between the i5 and the i7 is how many processes it can handle at once, and the i7s are hyper-threaded, which means they can handle two times as many processes. Who cares? i5.
Okay. i5. And then do you need a separate graphic card? Does it need to be integrated?
Well, if you get an XPS, if you want the best graphics performance, do not get the ones that have the Intel graphics, because that's basically motherboard graphics. It's built into the chip. For best performance, you want an NVIDIA graphics subsystem.
Okay, well, my two options with the Lenovo then would be either Intel or I think it's AMD.
AMD's fine too.
Okay.
Not for the microprocessor, for the video you're talking about.
Yes.
Yeah, AMD video. I don't like AMD. Well, I don't dislike, but I don't recommend AMD microprocessors. Use an Intel, i5, but it's with an AMD video card. That's fine.
Okay, so then if I go with a Lenovo, then that limits my options if I stay with the 7.
Well, everything limits your options, exactly. But I think the Lenovos are fine. What they're all going to offer will be fine.
Okay. But again, if I went with a Dell, and if I did go down to a 15-inch, then you say I'd just get an external...
Yeah, Dell sells, they even have a wireless bundle where you just put there's not even to charge it. It just puts it on an inductance charger, and all of a sudden it sees the video and everything, and it just, boom, it lights up a 24-inch monitor. I think as much as you like that 17, you will love a 24 or bigger. So I think what I would do, again, it's going to cost more, is get a 15-inch because it's more portable. You carry it around. And then when you get to the home, you sit down, you put that 15-inch next to the monitor. You've got a full-size keyboard, mouse, 24-inch monitor. You're going to really like that because of all the real estate you get.
Okay, and how much do 24-inch monitors
cost? Oh, they're $400 or $500 from Dell. Dell has very good 24s. Highly recommend it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More to come. Stay here. Yeah, we do have many more viewers than Tech TV ever had. That's cool. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. It's time to talk about computers and the internet and cell phones and home theater and all that jazz. 8888, Ask Leo is the number. 888-827-5536 if you want to talk about tech, any kind of tech. I'm here for you. I'm here to talk about it. 8888 Ask Leo. We were talking with Suzanne about getting a new laptop. She wants a 17-inch. I'm trying to talk her out of it. You still going for the 17, Suzanne? Have you had a chance to think about it?
I'm still thinking about it. Well, the stores, when they come programmed and stuff, they come with the home edition and stuff. Is that adequate?
That's fine. Windows Home Premium is what you want. You don't want the starter edition, but Windows 7 Home Premium is fine.
And most of them do not come with a backup CD or anything, right? If you had...
That's not fine. And you will hear it time and time again on the show. Somebody will call in, say, something went wrong. What do I do? And it almost always starts with, get your Windows install disk.
Okay.
So there's a couple of choices. You should ask about this. Now Dell, you've been talking about Dell. One of the great things Dell does, they may charge you a little extra, but they will send you a Windows install disk. Make sure when you go through the checkboxes, you get the disks.
Okay.
You have to buy it, I think. I don't think it's for free. And the reason is, by the way, blame Microsoft for this. Microsoft charges Dell and every other company less for Windows if they don't give you a disk. Now, why would Microsoft do that when every expert, anybody who knows anything about computing, knows that if you have a computer without the operating system disk, it's no good?
Mm-hmm.
What happens when the hard drive dies? Oh, I don't know. What happens if you get a virus? I don't know. Anybody with half a brain knows you need the operating system disk. Why would Microsoft, in effect, pay companies not to give you a disk? Well, it's not because they're looking out for you. It's because they think you're a thief.
Okay.
It's because Microsoft, in its insane, stupid paranoia, thinks that by giving you a disk, you will steal from them. And do they care about you? Apparently not.
It doesn't sound like it. So at Lenovo, if it's already come prepackaged, then they probably would not.
You should check. Some Lenovos do come with a disk. All of them come with a program that you can run to make disks. That's better than nothing.
Okay.
But if something goes wrong when you're making the disk, there's no second chance.
Okay.
Then you have to call Lenovo, say it failed, send me the disks.
So then if you were buying one, you would go through Dell and have them make it versus buy it through the store?
You could do it online.
Okay.
Do it online. If you go through, when you buy a Dell, there's a whole customization process. And
right.
Of course, the purpose of that is to get you to buy more stuff.
Right.
Oh, and are you sure you don't want a printer with that? And, you know, like, so be careful because it's tempting. It's easy. Oh, yeah, I'll take that. Yeah, I like it in green. You know, they get you.
Yeah. So 5,400 is adequate, or would I need 7,200?
5,400 for most people is adequate. You're not going to see a huge jump in speed go to 7,200. And on a laptop, 5,400's advantages are it's cooler, so it doesn't, you know, heat's a big problem in laptops. It's a small enclosure, and it uses less battery.
Okay.
So they're telling me Lenovo will let you burn as many copies of the backup disk as you want. That's a good sign.
That's a good sign.
But Dell, if I were you, I would go through the process of the selection process, and there'll be a point in which you say, would you like to buy the disks? And say, yes. It's like, I don't know what it is, $25-$30. It's worth it.
Right.
That's all they get back, by the way, from Microsoft. It's maybe even less, maybe $15 less. But there's so little profit in these things that $15 is a lot.
Right. I know.
So now I'm getting different feedback from the chat room. Some people say on some Lenovos you are able to burn as many copies as you want of the recovery. On some you cannot.
Okay.
Now, you know, they're saying Dell comes with a recovery partition. That's no good. If the hard drive dies, the fact that there was a restore disk on the partition does you no good.
Well, okay, I have XP on my Dell that I have now, and I know it's professional, so I know I can do a restore. I'm not familiar.
But a restore doesn't help you unless you have the disk. Without the disk, all sorts of things can go wrong that will make it impossible to restore from the hard drive. I mean, I'm not knocking it. I think that's a really good thing to have a hard drive recovery partition. Even Apple and OS X Lion now does that. It's such a good idea. They never did it before, but they do it now. But that does not obviate the need for a physical disk.
Okay.
For instance, let's say you get a virus, malware. Uh-huh. Malware will spread to every bit of the disk, including the recovery partition, if it can. As long as it can see it, it can spread to it. So how do you recover a malware-infected computer? You use the CD that can't possibly have been infected because you can't modify it. That's a known good copy. That's why you want that recovery disk.
So with Windows 7, because I'm not that familiar with it, with either the home or the professional, is the recovery part with that, or is that
that's up to the manufacturer. So it's different companies do different things.
Okay.
Just you get the disk. That's all you really need to know. It doesn't. It's best if it's a true Windows install disk. You know, that's just the Microsoft disk. But many of them will not give you that. They'll give you a recovery disk. That's fine too, because what it does is it restores the computer back to the way it was the day it arrived. That's fine, too. In fact, in some ways, that's easier. Now, if if you're sophisticated, you can always, and this is not, you know, if you know what you're doing, you can buy a computer that doesn't have recovery disks and burn an image onto a CD of that. Don't do anything with a computer except put some imaging software on there. There's a lot of good. Ease US makes one. There's a lot of companies that make free ones. I like Drive Snapshot from drivesnapshot.de. So you download that one. It's the only thing you do. You download that one program and you burn a recovery disk, an image, and put that on a DVD and you put that aside. Now that can be your recovery disk. And then you install everything. You do all the updates. You get it just the way you like and you burn another one. That's kind of a second recovery disk, and that's just as good as a recovery disk that came from the manufacturer, because hasn't had a chance to get bugs on it or anything. It'll get you back to the day the computer came. That's what you want. So if you're sophisticated, yes, you can make your own disks. In fact, I would do that for sure.
Okay.
But that's takes a little more sophistication.
Okay.
All right.
Okay, now I just have big decisions to make then. So.
It's so hard nowadays to buy a computer because there's so many choices. It's the same thing with buying a digital camera. Imagine. Mm-hmm. I mean, and most of the differences are, you know, minimal. It's how many angels will dance on the head of a pin. Don't overthink it. You'll be happy. If you get a Dell or a Lenovo, either one, you'll be happy.
Okay, so the minimum I need is at least 1.5, and then
Well, I can't tell you how large a hard drive, but I would guess that almost any computer you could buy these days would have plenty of space. Almost all of them have at least 500 gigs, if not a terabyte. I wouldn't worry about that. 4 gigs of RAM is kind of the rule of thumb on any computer you buy today.
Mm-hmm.
4 gigs. And yeah, most of that, i5, if you know, you want basic computer, i5, 500 gig hard drive, 4 gigs of RAM.
Okay.
Anything above that's great.
Okay.
Hey, thanks for the call, Suzanne. I appreciate it.
Oh, thank you so much.
Yeah, I know this is challenging. You go in the store and it's like, And the problem is these things that actually turn out to be kind of important, like the recovery discs, nobody talks about. Do you want a Blu-ray DVD player? I wouldn't, but you can. Sometimes people say 32-bit versus 64-bit Windows. You won't have a choice anymore. You'll have to fight to get the 32-bit version of Windows 7. Almost everybody sells 64-bit Windows 7. That's fine. If you're getting all new, it's only a problem if you have older hardware or software. The good news is it ain't getting any easier, which means I have a job. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo, we've got to get a Carbonite consumer live read in.
Oh, I did it again.
To know that I love you, baby, I'm lost without you. Can't help myself.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo's the number. Mark is in Los Angeles. Hey, Mark. Thanks for hanging on.
Leo, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for all your help.
So tell me, now when you called me last time, you said I want to do an app.
Yes.
Had you done any app programming before?
Nothing, no.
Not even regular programming.
No programming. I still don't do any programming. I'm not, you know, I know some people you might be getting confused. You told them how to program. I don't think I've got the mind to program.
It's good to know your limits.
Yeah, that's right. Dyslexic is not good to have programming. But you suggested Elance.
Good.
Which was both wonderful and horrible, but it ended up being wonderful after I found the right programmers on there.
So, yeah, so you had an idea for a program. You didn't want to write the software, so you went to Elance.com to hire somebody to write it. And you're absolutely right. Everybody's on here, so you gotta find the right guy. And if you find the wrong guy, he'll take your money and give you nothing. But if you find the right guy, you're golden. So I take it that's what happened to you.
Yeah, well, first I found the wrong guy, and the app was created, and it got rejected from the App Store.
Oh, dear.
And it was a big headache, you know, lots of money down the drain. So I started over from scratch.
Oh, man.
And got a great guy and created the app I wanted to create.
So let me ask you, first of all, you have one of the most, in fact, probably the single most important attribute of success of any kind, but especially entrepreneurial success, you have persistence. You do in the face of failure, you kept going.
Yes.
And that's where most people end. That's where most people would have ended the story at. I got rejected, and so I said, oh, and I moved on. You did not give up, and that's key. Yeah. Let me ask you, do you have any advice for people who are using Elance.com on how to find the right person?
Oh, God. This person had very high reviews. You just got to pay attention to the way they're dealing with you, the way they're corresponding with you, because this guy was flaky. The correspondents weren't addressing the subject I was asking him to do.
Yeah. Think about this. The guys, the Winklevoss twins, Harvard seniors, decided they wanted to do a social network. They wanted to call it Harvard Connect. They'd seen Friendster's success. They'd seen MySpace success. They said, we should do something like this. Let's hire a program. They found a freshman who was a genius. He was like, maybe he was a sophomore. I guess he was a sophomore. He was a genius. Great programmer. And they said, let's hire this guy. His name is Mark Zuckerberg. And they hired him. And they gave him a few $1,000s. And he kind of said, I'm working on it. Yeah, I kept putting him off. Flaky kind of. And then launches Facebook and says, see you guys. That's the classic. That's the classic.
He's out there doing that, yeah.
So
this idea, I don't think it's quite as big as Facebook, but...
You could imagine how upset they were. They of course ended up suing, making $60 million. They are suing again, saying that's not enough. I think it's enough, but I think it's more than enough because, as the actor, as Aaron Sorkin, the screenwriter, points out in the movie The Social Network, and puts in the mouth of Mark Zuckerberg, hey, anybody can have an idea. I made it happen. And that's really, and that's what you're doing, Mark. And I think another Mark, but I think that that's key. Is this one, you can always have an idea. Ideas are a dime a dozen, especially in software. It's easy to have an idea. It's implementation that makes all the difference.
Yeah. Well, that's what I hope that it does make. This does make a difference.
So let's give it. What is the name of your app?
It's Beautiful Clock Radio. In the age of social networking, Facebook, Twitter, and Google+, I made a clock radio.
But, I like that. I think that's a great idea.
Well, you're in radio. Yeah, thank you.
Is it beautifulclockradio.com?
Yes, it is. And what I wanted to listen. I listen to you all the time. My wife, you know, drives her nuts, but I listen to you all the time. I wanted to have easy access to you. I wanted to have easy access to KFI. I wanted to have easy access to KPCC. And I wanted 5 programmable buttons to store radio stations on, and I wanted an alarm that was easy to set. And I didn't see anybody doing this.
Well, so you did it. Look at this. This is great.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. Are you on the site? Yeah.
Look at that. So it has the time. Beautiful picture in the background. I presume that could be, that's user programmable, yeah?
No, that changes. The sun goes down with the
timing. Oh, cool.
At sunset, and then the moon comes up in the correct phase at night, and it goes into a night mode.
And then look, you have down here buttons for the radio stations, Twit, my podcast station's one of those. So just as easy as it is to program a clock radio, you just push the button, set the time. This is really nice.
You gave me so much help that you didn't even know of it. It's kind of a coincidence. I would be wondering what kind of radio streams I need to play, and you mentioned you have Icecast compatible.
Yeah, Shoutcast. You did the right thing. Yep.
And then you said Shoutcast. I never heard of Shoutcast.
Yeah.
You said Shoutcast, so I went in and did a partnership with them, which is pretty easy to do, and that's thousands of stations on there.
Yeah, automatically, no effort on your part.
That's right.
Well, a little effort. You had to call them. But you didn't have to. The programmer could very easily implement that because there's libraries. He doesn't have to do a lot of work. So
that's right.
This is a good choice.
Yeah, well, thank you.
Now, how are you, just let me ask you, and you don't have to answer, but I think there are others out there listening who would like to do something similar. How does it work? Do you pay the programmer a flat rate, an hourly rate? Do you give him a percentage? How did you work that out?
You can do it any way you want. You can set an hourly rate.
Okay.
The first guy was a flat rate. The second guy started out as a flat rate, and then we moved to an hourly rate because there's so many changes.
There's always that. And he's, he says, look, you're taking more and more of my time. I need to get paid by the hour.
Yes, that's right.
Fair.
So You know, but then they can milk you for hours as well. So you got to be, you know, anything can happen. But,
this is true anytime you hire anybody, by the way.
Well, yeah.
I just finished building a studio. We started in January. We thought we'd be done in April. Let me tell you, this can happen with anybody.
I know.
Yeah, but that's normal. Anybody who's ever worked with a contractor or anybody knows about this.
That's right. You should budget. I mean, this went probably quadruple what I planned.
Yeah.
But you got to at least figure double, I would say.
Yeah, that's what they told me. They said it'll take twice as long and cost twice as much, and they were right.
Yeah.
But so that's good. That's good. Good feedback. You're not giving him royalties.
No royalties.
And he's done now. And you got accepted.
He's done. Well, it's never really done. I mean, we got to get ready for OS 5.
Right.
You know, and it's right now it's not working on OS 5, but OS 5 is in beta, so we're hoping it's not going to be a huge bunch of work to get it for OS 5.
And if you found a good programmer who does write iPhone software for a living, he's gonna be up to date on all that stuff.
Yes.
He needs to be. That's his job.
Yeah, and on Elance, you know how you can find the good programmer, a guy who's too busy to do it. That's the guy you want.
Yes.
That's what I, fortunately, I had to wait 2 months for this.
That's good. That's a good sign where he says, I can't, I'm booked. I say, well, when would you be available? That's really good. I like that.
That's right. He said 2 months, and I thought, well, maybe this guy's good.
He must be good. He's turning me down. It's just like dating a girl. You never want to go out with a girl who says yes right away. Hey, Mark, congratulations. Beautiful clock radio. I wish you all the success in the world. What a nice story. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Our Brick House. Our Brick House is opening tomorrow. Second to last show from the old Tech Guy Labs. You want to see the progress in the Brick House studios? We have a drop cam set up. It's a little spy cam that is up in the corner that you can watch part of it, not all of it, get worked on. You actually can't see where I'll be doing the radio show from. That's out of the view. But you can find our drop cam online. Here's the address. I'll put a link in the show notes too. bit.ly/twitdrop. TWITDROP. Hey, the next time Alex or anybody goes over to the studio, if you'd aim the drop cam up a little bit so we can see the gear being installed, or you can tell somebody down there. Because I would like to see, we've got our big logo is getting put up right now. It's a massive rusty gear. I'd kind of like to watch that happen. bit.ly/twitdrop. It's kind of fun. Kind of fun. Mark in, we talked to Mark. Let's go to James in Richmond, Virginia. Hi, James. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Thank you.
Yeah, long-time listener, first-time caller.
Thank you, sir.
And I have a problem with my iMac.
Hmm. Okay.
What's happening is I'm trying to use the Snow Leopard disk, and I'm trying to go into the utilities to, I guess, defrag my hard drive. But it won't let me do it. It restarts, it reboots, and then it goes to a white screen with the Apple logo, and it just stays there.
Where are you finding a defrag utility? It must be a third-party utility you purchased.
Well, no. I was using a disk.
OS X does not come with a defrag utility. It doesn't need defrag.
Right.
Don't worry. Any good operating system will not get fragmented anymore. That's old school thinking. It's like that memory manager thing I talked about at the beginning of the show. Right. There's no need to defrag. Don't even do it.
Okay. Yeah, I was using disk utilities, but it wouldn't boot over because it comes up.
Well, Apple's disk utility does not have defragging built into it.
Oh, okay.
It has. Right, the only thing that you might ever want to do with the disk utility is repair disk permissions.
Okay.
And even that is only, you know, if you there aren't very many things you can do if you have trouble with a Macintosh. Only a couple of things you can do. Repairing disk permissions is one. It's a Unix-based operating system. Permissions is a feature of modern operating systems. Windows has it as well, where only some people can modify a file. So there's write permissions, there's read permissions, and there's execute permissions, the permission to run a program. And those permissions, if they get messed up, and it's an easy thing for a file permissions to get confused, can sometimes cause problems. I'll give you an example. A program expects to be able to write to its settings file, its preferences file. If the permissions on the preferences file are set in such a way the program doesn't have write access, some programs will crash.
Okay.
At the very least, they won't remember its settings. So if you know you get weird behaviors like that, repair permissions is it's certainly a safe thing to do. It does no harm. Similarly, disclean allows you to erase and repartition the drive. Disk utility erase and repartition the drive, but that's all it does. Then nothing else it can do. There's no defrag necessary. OS X, like any modern operating system, automatically keeps the disk defragmented.
Right. Okay.
Don't worry about it.
All right. I won't worry about it then. And then I have one other question. Would it be a good idea to get an external hard drive?
It is a good idea. External hard drives are a great backup solution because it's fast. It's easy. You just drag files. I don't recommend a backup program per se. I just say, you know, drag files over. There are some good Macintosh choices if you want to do backup. My favorite is called Super Duper. It can be run on a schedule automatically every day, for instance, to back up changes to that external hard drive. I think that's a very good choice.
Okay.
All right, James?
Thank you very much.
Hey, thanks for the call. Yeah, I mean, I talked at the beginning of the show. The number two selling application in the Mac App Store right now is a memory cleaner for 99 cents. It's a scam. You don't need a memory cleaner. Your memory's clean enough. Thank you. I can't believe it's the number two selling app. I hope you haven't bought it. If you haven't, don't. You don't need to spend the money. There, I saved you a buck. Aren't you glad you listened today? There's a lot of voodoo programs you'll see people using. Memory cleaners are old school. We needed one 15 years ago. We needed them. Not anymore. Not since OS X came out. Not since Windows XP came out. You just don't need them. Richard, Canyon Lake, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, Richard.
Hi, Bill. How you doing?
I am great. How are you?
Good. I have a PowerBook G4 now, and it's time to upgrade, dude.
I'll answer your first question. You cannot put Lion on that.
Right, I know that.
You need to have a Mac that you purchased within the last 4 years. Not only does it have to be Intel, but it also has to be a modern Mac.
Right. Well, I want to get a new iMac, and I was listening to your podcast.
Oh, you're worried about Quicken. Hey, we got to take a break. Hang on. I'm going to talk about that when we come back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Last few minutes today. One more show tomorrow, then we move to the new Tech Guy Labs, the Twit Brickhouse Studios. You're going to love it. You're going to love it. Wait till you see it. Now, we were talking to Richard, who is working on an old G4. It's time to get a new computer. Good news about the new computer. It'll come with Lion. You don't have any choice, Richard, do you? You have to get Lion on it. Bad news. Quicken 2007 will not work on it.
Right.
Because Apple, and this is, you know what, Apple, I both commend and condemn them for this. In the balance, I commend them for it. They are, unlike any computer company I've ever seen, willing to leave the past in the dust. And they've done it many, many times. They did it with OS X. They did it with Intel when they moved from PowerPC to Intel. You're using the old PowerPC chip. And they've done it again with Lion. And you kind of, in order to make progress, you kind of have to do this. I think sometimes people say, oh, it's just a way of selling new hardware. And truthfully, and believe me, I'm no Apple apologist. I criticize them for many things. But truthfully, I think that they are not doing this to make money. They are doing it because in order to make progress in technology, sometimes you just have to say, no, we're not going to support you. And unfortunately, this is a disadvantage Microsoft has. Microsoft never says no. They make Windows work with every previous version as best they can, and that hobbles them a little bit.
Yeah. Well, when I get the new computer, I understand that I probably have to get Quicken for Windows, and then...
Well, that's one way to do it. You can keep your G4 and use it as a Quicken box. The problem is that Quicken, and by the way, don't blame Apple for this. Blame Intuit. Intuit's known this was coming for years. This is a mark of the lack of respect Intuit has for its Apple customer. Nothing else.
Yeah.
Intuit has known for years. The version of Quicken requires is a PowerPC program. They never updated it for Intel. It requires a piece of technology to Apple's credit called Rosetta that they included in every version of OS X for many years now, since they switched to Intel, that made it possible to run PowerPC programs on the newer processor, on the Intel processor, in many cases better than they ran on PowerPC. Rosetta was a great solution, but it's not included anymore, and you can't download it anymore. It's done. And Apple had to do this, basically, to tell companies like Intuit, dudes, fix your software. Update it. We've been running on Intel for years. What's the story? So what do you do? Well, Lion does allow you to run older versions of OS X in virtual machines, so you could run Snow Leopard in a virtual machine. You could run Windows in a virtual machine. You could keep your G4. Quicken, apparently, Intuit, get this, instead of fixing it, they're going to start building pieces of Rosetta into it so that it will still run. Instead of rewriting this to work on Intel, Intuit's Fakatka solution is, well, we'll put Rosetta into Quicken.
Well, if I get Windows and install it on there, which I'm planning on doing.
First of all, you'll get a better Quicken, because Quicken for Windows has been updated.
Yeah. Now, how about transferring from the G4 to the Quicken?
Really important, if you're using Quicken, export your Quicken data before you upgrade, because you won't be able to after you upgrade.
Where do I export it to?
Just a file. You could put it on a thumb drive. As long as you do it Intuit format, you'll be fine.
I looked at the export, and it gives me a choice of QIF or select item to QIF or Quicken for Windows.
Well, I would do both. Why not? They're not that big. QIF is the Quicken interchange format. That's the standard format. Sometimes you lose data, though, with QIF, so I would export to both QIF, QFX, and Quicken for Windows.
Okay, now the Quicken for Windows, does that go? That opens up another website?
No, all it does is save a file on your hard drive.
No, because when I selected that one, it says it was opening up another website.
Let me see. I'm looking at their Quicken article. God, these guys, it just drives me crazy. In fact, if I were you, I'd just drop into it entirely and go to some modern thing like Kaching. But they want you to go to Mint, right? This is really Intuit just saying, don't use Quicken.
I'm open for another program, but everything I looked at said you can't import. Add to it or download to it.
I am so angry at this whole situation. There is an article, I'll put it in the show notes, Converting Quicken for Mac Files to Quicken for Windows. It's been updated to, it was just updated 2 weeks ago, which tells me that Intuit understands there are a lot of you. I don't know why it opens a web browser. Maybe you have to download. You do have to rectify any discrepancies due to duplicated transactions. This sounds like a mess. I couldn't be more angry. And I have to say, I loved Quicken. I abandoned them because I knew that Intuit, gosh, I wish I could use a stronger word, stinks.
Well, is there any other program that I can download my files too?
That's a good question. I don't know. And boy, I'm going to see if I can do some research and find out. There are other programs out there. I don't know.
I looked at Mint, and Mint, basically, the only thing they accept is downloading from,
right,
like your bank.
Yeah, they want you to use Yodlee. And it doesn't work with my Bank of America. Apparently, somebody in the chat room, Country Signs, is saying his Quicken updated last night so that it would work with Lion. So apparently, Intuit is responding to this by, and I think they're building Rosetta in. So there are other choices, but I don't know what the best choice would be. I'd get the heck away from Intuit as fast as I could move. Shame on you, Intuit. Shame on you. Shame on you for making a program people rely on. They put their financial data in and then saying, yeah, sorry. Yeah, guess we won't update that anymore. Shame on you. To me, the best response is to write them a nasty letter and then start using somebody else's program. But I understand you've invested a huge amount of time entering this data. That's just, it's inexcusable. Don't you have any feeling? How many millions of people are using Quicken on Mac? Don't you have any feeling for these people at all? This tells me that this company is terrible. When a company treats customers like that, do not do business with them. I cannot word it more strongly. Do not do business with them. Shocking. Let's say hi to Hugh in Mission Viejo, California. Hi, Hugh.
Hi, Leo. Nice yes. talking to you.
Nice talk to you.
Yeah, here's my problem. I have a 3-year-old Samsung 1080p with flat screen TV, and when you turn it on, it the screen gets all jittery on the left-hand side and appears to be growing. It lasts for about 20 minutes.
It's and then broken. Get it fixed.
Get it what?
Get it fixed. It's broken.
Okay, I was wondering about that.
Yeah, you know, there's nothing I can do to help you. It's broken. You might check the cables, but I think it's broken. And I'm out of time. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Have a great geek week.